concluding section of the Bhagavad Gita, the last 15 verses that Krishna speaks to Arjuna. There we see the heart of Krishna being revealed. Can all of you sit in a circle? And all of you try to sit in such a way that you have a Gita next to you. So we'll start from verse 58 and we'll go till verse 72. From 72 onwards, actually, Arjuna speaks one verse and then Sanjaya speaks. So now, the 18th chapter is called as the perfection of renunciation. Moksha Sanyasa Yoga in Sanskrit. In the 18th chapter, Krishna gives an overview of the whole Bhagavad Gita. He talks about Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and then Bhakti Yoga. And here, he is concluding his instructions. So 18.58 is the most direct verse for suggestive of Krishna consciousness. Many times people wonder, where is this phrase Krishna consciousness coming from? When I heard it first time, I was quite surprised. Because, you know, Krishna is a religious term, consciousness is a scientific term. Well, how are the two coming together? Krishna consciousness, what does this mean? So, we'll recite the verse together. Then, one by one, each one of you can read the translations as of each successive verse. And we'll discuss them one by one. So, 18.58 together. Machitta sarva durgani together. Machitta sarva durgani matrasada tarishyati asachetva mahankaran nashoshyati vinangshyati. Yes.
If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost.
Yes. So, Krishna is very clearly telling Arjuna what to do. The Gita is not a book of commandments. It is a book of choices. Choices and consequences. So, Krishna is giving two choices to Arjuna. Machittaha is very clearly Krishna consciousness. Machittaha. If you become conscious of me, what will happen? Sarva Durgani, the word Durga is related with Durga. Durga is material nature. And Durga also means fort. So obstacles basically. Fort is an obstacle. If somebody is imprisoned in a fort, you know, to come out is very difficult. So Sarva Durgani, whatever obstacles might be there, Mat Prasadat Tarishyasi. You will float over them. Tarishyasi is easily pass over them. On the other hand, Athachet. So, mahankaran, out of false ego, na shoshyasi, if you do not hear me, if you think you don't need to follow my instructions, you think you know what you should do then, vinangshyasi. Vinangshyasi means you will be lost. You will be completely lost. So then, after speaking this verse, Arjuna may wonder, why will I be lost? You know, I have my own intelligence and I'll act according to that. So then, Arjuna and Krishna in the next two verses will describe a philosophy called as Swabhavavad. Swabhavavad means to act according to our nature. Everybody has their own nature and they act according to nature. So, 18.58, the second half, how you will get lost if you do not hear me, that Krishna will describe in the next two verses. Let's recite the next verse. Yadahankaram ashritya na yogsya iti manyase shaishavyavasayaste prakriti swam yokshasi. Yes. Yes. Yadahankaram ashritya. So, very significant word Krishna uses, ashritya. Ashritya means take shelter. So, if you take shelter of your ego, so you have to take shelter of somebody. If you take shelter of, don't take shelter of Krishna, you have to take shelter of our own ego. Because, ultimately, we are not our ego also. So, we take shelter of our ego and think that this ego, what he is telling me is right. So, if you take shelter of your ego, na yotsya. So, you are thinking you should not fight. I am telling you, you should fight. Na yotsya iti manyase. And what will happen? prakriti stvam niyokshasi. So prakriti is material nature. Niyokshasi, she will engage you. Mithyesha vyavasayasti. Mithya means false, illusion. Vyavasaya means your determination. You remember where does the word vyavasaya come in a famous verse in the Gita? Vyavasayatmika buddhi. So your determination, vyavasaya, will be mithya, falsely directed. Material nature will engage you. What that means is, Krishna is telling Arjuna that your propensity is to fight. And if you try to avoid fighting, you may temporarily curb your propensity, but it is going to surface again. And at that time, material nature will engage you. Now, out of false compassion, you are saying, oh, I don't want to kill the Kshatriyas. But in future, how will you live? You have to live by begging. If you live by begging, at that time, if somebody refuses charity to you, you will immediately take out your sword. And then, Chakravarti passes, and on seeing that, I will laugh at you. Krishna is telling. Of course, Krishna is not sadistic, but he is just telling Arjuna that this will not work because you have to act according to your nature. So first Krishna tells that you will be engaged by nature. And now next verse, Krishna will use the general principle. Just like 8.4 and 5, first Krishna says, antakaleja mameva. He gives a specific application. And then, it is a general principle. Yam yam va pismaran bhava. Whatever stage you remember, that's what you will let in. So like that, he tells for Arjuna, material nature will engage you. Next verse he says, actually everybody is engaged by material nature. Swabhava jena kaunteya nibaddha svena karmana kartum nechati anmohat karishyasya vashopital. Yes.
Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction. But compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the way, son of Kunti.
So, now here Srila Prabhupada gives the second part of the verse first in the translation to help us understand the flow. Kartum na ichchasi anmohat. Kartum na ichchasi. Your ichcha is that you will not act. Why? Mohat. Because of illusion. Karishyasi. Still you will do it. Avashopitat. Helplessly. Why? Why will you be helpless? Swabhavajena kaunteya. Nibaddha. Nibaddha means bound. How is everybody bound? Everybody is bound by their swabhava. Svena karmana. So how does swabhava bind us? It binds us to our svena karma. Svena karma means our ordained nature. So, actually, Baldev Vidya Bhushan and his Gita Bhushan explains that swabhava means the impulses and the inclinations that we have acquired by our past karma. That is called our swabhava. Now, Swaroop and Swabhava are different. Swaroop is our original spiritual form, which we have in the spiritual world. Now, Swabhava, actually what we call as Swabhava, is a Parabhava. It's not the Bhava of the soul. It is the Bhava of the body and the mind which we have. So, all of us know that our actions produce two kinds of reactions. The gross and the subtle. For example, if somebody engages in illicit sex, the gross reaction will be he may get a disease or he may get some other karmic consequence. The subtle reaction is that desire becomes stronger. So, that is how our swabhava is created. By repeated actions, we get certain instincts and certain inclinations. And those carry on even after that particular activity stops. So actually, when we do an action, you know, there is a long sequence of events that is set off by them. And one part of that event being set off is that we get a particular reaction. For example, if I overeat, I'll get the reaction of stomach upset. But along with that, a whole sequence of events is set up by which I develop a more and more a tendency to overeat. So, this is something gross, but by our swabhava, nibaddha svena karmana, everybody is bound to their particular activities. So, you know, what is our swabhava, we can understand in several ways. One of the ways is by seeing what kind of faults we find in others. What does that mean? You know, if somebody has a Brahmanical swabhava, then, you know, he will always see, suppose he's a he's good at language. If he goes anywhere, he will see all the spelling mistakes. Somebody is a Kshatriya, wherever he will go, he will see all managerial mistakes. You know, if somebody is a Vaishya, he will see how, you know, money is being wasted, money is being mismanaged, and, you know, people are not earning properly. This is this expensive, this is that expensive. And so like that, you know, whatever we are good at, we are also good at finding faults in others when they do those things. That is the natural consequence. So all of us have our swabhava. And the Vedic culture is unique in the whole world in that it provides a structure and a system for spiritual advancement. See, there may be Christianity, there may be Islam. They also say, have faith in Jesus, have faith in Muhammad, and you will be delivered. Well, that is good. You should have faith, but by faith alone one is not delivered. One has to follow a process. And while following the process, because different people have different natures, only in the Vedic culture there is a structure and a system for spiritual advancement. Okay, you have a Brahmanical nature, you act in this particular way. These are your set of duties. You are now this, you are a Vaishya, you act in this particular way. These are your set of duties. So, you know, the whole process of spiritual advancement is very scientifically structured and organized. And similarly, you know, ultimate goal of all religions is to develop love for God. But how do we develop love for God? You know, when all of us have to live in this world and earn a living. So the whole system of Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, this is such an amazing division of lifespan. By the way, initially you focus yourself on getting spiritual impressions and spiritual wisdom. And then if one wants, one goes back into the world. And then one again comes up. So it's a very beautiful structure. And this is... So the Vedic culture knows that all of us have our inclinations. And to a large extent we are bound by our inclinations. But even while being bound by our inclinations, how we can go towards Krishna and not away from Krishna. That is the expertise. So a Brahmana, he has to study. He will take his books and study no matter what you do. But then, give him spiritual books to study. Give him books about Krishna to study. So, whatever is our nature, dovetail that nature. A king, a person who is a Kshatriya, he will want to rule. Cannot stop him from ruling. So, the nature is something which cannot be changed. But, the nature can be dovetailed. And that is a great, great science, how to dovetail that. So when we talk about our swabhava, there is what we do and why we do. So what we do, to a large extent we cannot change that. What we do, we will continue doing that. Even if somebody becomes a Brahmachari, you know, if he is intellectually oriented, he will do certain kinds of services. If he is managerially oriented, he will do different kind of services. If he is financially oriented, he will do different kind of services. And by Krishna's mercy, he will attain success. Ambi Grahastha will also be materially well situated if he does services as a job or profession according to his nature. Now, in modern times there is this whole notion that, for example, there is masturbation. So people say that actually when the instincts come, you should fulfill them. It's natural. It's natural, so fulfill them. This is not what Swabhava is talking about. Why? Because the swabhava refers not just to, it doesn't refer to lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. There are certain thoughts and actions which are impelled by these anarthas. And they have to be controlled by everyone. If you look in the 7th canto, that is the chapter on ideal human society. And there, you know, if we look at it, we will find that we don't have even the qualification of shudras. So we can't even say kalav shudra sambhav, you know, kalav mlecha sambhav it will be. So we don't have this. So even a Kshudra has to regulate himself. So the idea is that there is a certain circle of activities which we are inclined to do. For example, a lust is something which troubles everyone. Even a person who is intellectually oriented, he is troubled by lust. You know, Einstein is considered to be the biggest brain in modern, in the last century. But you know, he had a love affair when he was in college, he got married and he got fed up with his wife. Then he had a love affair with his cousin, and 20 years he was having the affair, and then he divorced his wife and he married his cousin. So, you know, everybody is troubled by lust. whether the person is intellectual or a person is a bureaucrat or a person is a businessman or what, everybody is troubled by lust. Everybody is troubled by greed. Of course, the gradations will be lesser and more depending on how much one is in the mode of passion. And even a materialistic intellectual, if you see students, if they want to succeed in their careers, they may be troubled by lust, but they can't go about watching your sites all day and all night. Only if they are able to discipline themselves, they can succeed. So, when we talk about swabhava, swabhava is not about the saying that, oh, I feel lusty, so I'll act on lust. That is not swabhava. That is something, the anartha is something which everybody has to control. The degree of control which is expected from different people will be less or more, depending on whether the person is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. But certainly, everybody has to control. But swabhava here means that all of us are inclined to do a particular kind of work. So, Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport that without discipline, one cannot attain success even in material life. What to speak of spiritual life? So, we have to be disciplined even for material success. So, that discipline means curbing lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. But in curbing lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion, we cannot curb our nature. Somebody has a Brahmana nature, somebody has a Kshatriya nature. So, Krishna is telling Arjuna that now you are motivated by illusion. No, by talking lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. So, by illusion, what is the nature of illusion? Illusion makes us think that that which is good for us is bad and that which is bad for us is good. So, illusion, it perverts by 180 degrees our vision. So, by illusion you are thinking that fighting is not good for you. But this is wrong. Eventually you will be bound by your nature. So now, if we are all bound by our nature, then what is the hope for us? If you see, Baldev Vidyabhushan in his Govinda Bhashya analyzes very elaborately, based on the Vedanta Sutra verses, who is the actual doer. He says there are two kinds of verses in the scriptures. Some scriptures say that material nature is the doer. Some scriptures say that actually the soul is the doer. Which is the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, famous verse, which is material nature is the doer? Prakriti Kriyamanani, 3.27. That what you think, the deluded soul thinks that he is doing what is actually done by material nature. But if it is done by material nature, then why is the soul considered responsible? You know, Krishna is telling so many times to Arjuna, do this and don't do this. So that means, to some extent, the soul is also the doer. Arjuna is the doer. Krishna is telling Arjuna. And yudhyasvavigatajvara, fight without laziness. So then, who is actually the doer? Is the soul the doer or material nature the doer? Actually, both are the doers. Baldev Vidyabhushan gives a beautiful example in Govinda Bhashya. He says that sometimes we may use the word, the axe cuts the tree. Now, when we say the axe cuts the tree, what does it mean? It means two things. Obviously, that the axe is not cutting. It's a person who is cutting. It's a person who is cutting the tree. So, that person is already implied in the axe. But at the same time, when we say axe cuts the tree, it implies that the person cannot cut the tree without the axe. So both the person and the axe are required for cutting the tree. Like that, the scriptures when they say sometimes, the material nature is the doer. Prakriti kriyamanai. That's like saying the axe cuts the tree. Without material nature, the soul cannot do anything in this world. But at the same time, material nature cannot do anything itself. It's only in the soul desire. So both are the doers. But the soul is not the only doer. So when the emphasis is to given to the soul that you are not the only doer, then it is said material nature is the doer. But when it is to emphasize that the soul is actually responsible for his actions, then it is said you are the doer. So how is it? The soul is a doer in the sense that the soul is the desirer. The soul desires. And once he desires, material nature takes over. So a particular scientist might say, okay, I want to do research in microbiology. Okay. Then his conditioning will take over and he starts doing research in that. So, swabhava jena kaunti. Then what is the solution? Krishna is going to tell Arjuna now in the next verse that yes, all of us are bound by swabhava, all of us are bound by nature, but above nature is the Supreme Lord. There is jiva, there is prakriti, but above them is Ishvara. So, therefore you surrender to that Ishvara. Let's recite the next verse. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddeshe arjuna tishthati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Rudani Mayaya.
The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy.
Correct. So, Supreme Lord is directing the wanderings. Now, if you look at the translation, there is no word directing there in it. This is Prabhupada's genius. You know why? Because Prabhupada wants has to make concepts very, very difficult for us to understand, understandable to us. So, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam, all living entities, Ishvara, Riddeshe Arjuna Tishthati, situated in the heart, Brahmayan Sarvabhutani, the wanderings of all living entities, Yantra Arudhani Maya, that the living entities are wandering on a machine made of material nature, Yantra. So, there is no directing over here, but it is implicit over there. That's why, you know, Shabda Bodh is a huge science. You know, there are books written on Shabda Bodh. Shabda Bodh means, when we take words, how we understand the meaning of the words. And, you know, Shabda Bodh depends to a large extent on consciousness. That means, if a person is in the mode of ignorance, when he hears the same words, for example, I am ecstatic. You say that. Probably a person in Tamoguna will think, oh, you have taken the drug called ecstasy and that's why you have become ecstatic. So, it's a very gross example, but Shabda Bodh to a large extent depends on one's level of consciousness. So, that's why people who do not regulate their lives, they may be scholars in the Gita, but if they are not disciplined, they are not following the four regulatory principles, they are not devoted to God, they may even analyze the words, but the meaning will miss out. Meaning will be missed out. So, why is Prabhupada using the word directing over here? Because just like in a movie, the director controls the actions of everyone. But the director is invisible. Similarly, the super soul is controlling everyone, but super soul is invisible. Upadrashta Anumantach. He's overseer, permitter, but he's not seen anywhere. And what is Krishna telling? Yes. You are controlled by your nature. You are wandering on a machine made of material nature. But it's a very interesting machine. It's a machine which often seems to go its own way. Unless you very consciously choose, it just goes its own way. So then, Krishna is saying, yes, super soul is directing the wandering of this, the working of this machine. And therefore, you should surrender to that super soul. So that first level is jiva is controlled by nature, but nature is controlled by super soul. Therefore, surrender to the super soul. That's the next verse. Tam eva sharanam gaccha sarvabhavena bharata tat prasadat param shantim sthanam prapsyasi shashvatam.
Yes. Surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and the eternal abode.
Yes. So, surrender to him. Tam eva sharanam gaccha. It's very interesting. Krishna is not using surrender to me. Surrender to him. We'll discuss this why. Krishna, there are some places in the Bhagavad Gita where he refers to himself in the third person. First person is I, second person is you, third person is he. Surrender to that super soul. Tam eva sharanam gaccha. How should you surrender? Sarva bhavena bharata. Wholeheartedly, with your full bhava. Actually, to a large extent, even when we chant Hare Krishna, practice spiritual life, no, our bhav is completely abhav. There is no bhav. Our bhav is actually elsewhere. You know, my exams, my job, my marriage, my this, my that. All our emotions are over there. And when chanting Hare Krishna, there is practically no bhav over there. Then we cannot expect any reciprocation from Krishna. Because Krishna, when Krishna wants to come and reciprocate, we are not available for him. Therefore, sarva bhavena bharata. There is another place where the word bhav comes in the Bhagavad Gita. Famous verse. Buddha bhava samanvita. Samanvita means complete, full bhav. The wise person, he understands that I am the source of everything. With his whole heart, he surrenders to me. So now, why should we surrender to him wholeheartedly? Tat prasadat, by his mercy. Just a few verses ago, Krishna used the word prasad once earlier. Didn't he? Achitta sarvadurgani mat prasadat tarishyasi. Tat prasadat. So the word prasad means mercy. By his mercy, what will happen? Tat prasada param shanti. We will attain the supreme peace. So Arjuna is talking about an immediate peace. Immediate peace is, let's have no war. Let's have no war. But that immediate peace is not going to last in this material world. Because always there is going to be some disturbance in this world. Some disturbance always. Jayadat Maharaj once asked to give a lecture. When the 1999 to 2000 came up. Peace for the 21st century. We started the lecture by saying, there is going to be no peace in the 21st century. This said there was no peace in the 20th century. There was no peace in the 10th century. There was no peace in the 15th century. There was no peace in the 18th century. There will be no peace in the 21st century. But we can become peaceful. So the peace formula not for the 21st century. The peace formula for us in the 21st century. So the Parama Shanti, the supreme peace comes not by trying to avoid war. That will literally temporary peace. Actually, supreme peace comes when we make peace with God. What does it mean to make peace with God? Actually, we have rebelled against God and come to this material world. And all that we are doing to a large extent, it is a war against God. I want to do this, God has some other will, I have some other will. So we have to make peace with God. Make peace with God means what? That we accept God's will as our will. Okay, this is what you want me to do, my dear Lord? I will do it. So that is the supreme peace that will come. Tat prasadat param shantim. So actually there is a whole internal battle. When we don't accept Krishna's authority, then we come under the authority of lust, anger, greed, and we pride and illusion, and all of them are fighting within our hearts. And that's what is causing agitation. When we accept Krishna's will, make peace with God, then we experience peace within our heart. So actually, that is the secret of peace that Bhagavad Gita talks about. Sometimes people say Bhagavad Gita is talking about violence. Why is God not peace loving? Why is God not peace loving? Some Muslims, some Christians, they go to innocent Hindus, they say, what kind of gods do you have? Your gods are carrying weapons. Your God carries, spears and tridents and wheels. First of all, your gods are not peace-loving because they carry weapons. And secondly, so they are so insecure, they can't protect themselves. They need weapons to protect themselves. That is our Hindu never think of. Really, I never thought of this. So, you have to understand that actually, the point is that actually, Supreme Lord Krishna does not carry any weapons. His weapon is flute, by which he attracts all the souls over here. But the devatas, they are not supreme. They are administrators. And as administrators of universal affairs, they have to discipline. For the purpose of disciplining, they need weapons. So, actually, if we often talk about this, the Vedic culture being, the Vedic scriptures being a unabridged dictionary, and the other religion scriptures being the pocket dictionary. Now, we may think, our religion is very great. But actually speaking, if you use directly unabridged dictionary, it can be very confusing. Because sometimes the same word has opposite meanings. For example, epithet. The word epithet means insult and praise. If you look at the dictionary, the same word has both meanings. Now, same word, opposite meanings. So what happens is, if a person is not very well-versed, if he takes an unabridged dictionary, he'll get completely confused. And that's what we see. Hinduism is paramount confusion. Isn't it? Should we worship this or that or what? And there are so many gods, you cannot worship all of them also. So what to do? So actually, people, because the Vedic philosophy is so vast and there are practically nobody to teach the philosophy, so people are very confused. So yes, in that sense, the Krishna, the Islam, it's a pocket dictionary. Okay, one word, epithet, glorification. Yes. One, just surrender to Muhammad, just surrender to Jesus. And that is the only way. This word, only one meaning. So actually, in one sense, It's simple. But the reality in this world is not simple. So a pocket dictionary is useful for, in some situations. That's why actually those who are following Vedic culture, it's their great responsibility to properly understand the Vedic philosophy and explain it. Now, does epithet mean glorification or insult? Well, it means both. You have to see the context in which it is said. So like that, you know, is vegetarianism recommended or not recommended in the scriptures? If you see the Rig Veda, Samveda, so many rituals describe how you should sacrifice animals in yajna. And you know, sometimes we just say, four regulated principles, give up meat eating. But then somebody comes and quotes verses from the Rig Veda. You should cut meat like this and then, you know. And you know, there's one thing is said that the animal gets a spiritual body, but there are people who eat the animal's body also. And then there are verses which may say that, okay, this person can eat this part of the body, this person can eat this part of the body, that is also regulated. You wonder, is this religious? Who are they telling? No, that is for that level. People want to eat meat, so it's allowed. So actually, it's a huge master plan. And what happens is, there's a master plan, but the master is not there. And then the plan becomes the chaos. Because master plan means it's quite intricate, complicated, you know. He has to do this, he has to do this, he has to do this. So the other religion is like a simple plan. But Vedic literature is a master plan. So master plan, that's why the master is very important. Without the master, everything becomes very confusing. That's why here you will see Krishna will tell one level and then Krishna will reject that level to go to a higher level. So, we'll discuss this. So here what is happening? Krishna is told, okay, you are controlled by material nature. Somebody will say, I am controlled by material nature. Oh, then let me just act according to my nature. No, the control of material nature is the super soul. Surrender to him. So yes, you have to fight, but make peace with God. Don't make peace with your enemies, make peace with God. It means, make peace with God and fight according to his will. Your nature is to fight, you can't avoid it. But you fight according to God's will. And then what will happen? Not only will you attain real peace within, but you will attain sthanam prapsati shashvatam. You will attain the eternal spiritual world. Shashvatam sthan you will attain. If you are thinking in terms of whether you will gain the small kingdom or not, but I am not talking about gaining or losing the small kingdom. I am talking about attaining the eternal kingdom. Sthanam prapsati shashvatam. And now, Krishna concludes his instructions. And he says, now I have given you the wisdom. Now you decide what you are going to do. Iti te jnanam akhyatam kuhyat kuhyataram maya vishaitat asheshena yathechasi tathakuru. So, iti te jnanam akhyatam. Akhyatam means to speak. Jnan, I have spoken. Guhyat guhyataram maya. Guhya is secret. Guhyatara is more secret. So, I have spoken more secret knowledge. Then what I had spoken before. Now what should you do? Vimrishaitan. Asheshin. Deliberate. Deeply on it. And then, yatha ichchasi. As is your desire, you can act. So Krishna respects our free will. And he never imposes his will on our will. He wants us to lovingly exercise his free will. Sometimes people ask, why did God create this world at all? Out of respect for our free will. You know, if God has given us free will, and there is no point in saying you have free will, but you have no place to exercise your free will. So the very point of having free will means there has to be a place where we can exercise our free will. That's why out of his love and his respect for our free will, out of his love, he gives us free will. And out of respect for our free will, he gives us this world where we can act. So similarly, Krishna has given so much instruction, but he's telling, now you deliberate and decide what you want to do. Chakravarti Pad says, Asheshena. Asheshishana means as long as you want. So he's saying, you know, how long do you want to deliberate, Arjuna? I have told you clearly. So implication is, you don't spend too much time on deliberating, just do what I'm telling you to do. Asheshishana. Actually, the living entity has been deliberating for thousands of lifetimes now. What should I do? What should I do? And Krishna is continuing. Now Arjuna gets lost in deep thought. Now Krishna told us in the third chapter, he told us in the fifth chapter, he told that in the seventh chapter. It's become very grave. Because, you know, so for example, we are having a class and everybody is hearing the class. And then suddenly after that, so now you can do what you want to do. I didn't know I was supposed to do something else. I thought I was just supposed to hear the class. But then suddenly the onus comes on him. And he says, great, he doesn't know what to do. Now obviously Arjuna Krishna wants it to do something. Like something one person told Prabhupada, Swamiji, I don't know the verse in the Gita, but I heard Krishna says, whatever you do, you will come to me. This is a very famous mistranslation of Mama Vartamanu Vartante Manushya Parva Sarvasya. All people are on my path, but the mistranslation is, all paths lead to me. No, all people are on my path, but some people are going towards me, some are going away from me. So, anyway, so he says, whatever you do, you will come to me. So then Prabhupada gave a simple refutation. He says, if whatever you do, you are going to come to Krishna, then why does Krishna have to speak the Bhagavad Gita? It doesn't make any sense. So obviously, Krishna has some intentions. So Arjuna wants to understand what is Krishna's intention. He's thinking very deeply. And seeing Arjuna becoming so grave, the compassion within Krishna's heart overflows. And Krishna tells Arjuna, don't worry, you don't have to think about all this. I will tell you what you should do. Sarva guhyatamam bhuyaha shrunu me paramam vachaha ishtosi me drudamiti tato vaksham itehitam. So previous verse he said guhyatara, more secret. Now I am saying sarva guhyatama, most confidential knowledge I am speaking. Bhuyaha, again I am speaking this. Actually Krishna spoke this earlier also. When he started the 10th chapter he said param bhuya pravakshami jnananam jnanamuttamam jnatva munaya sarve param siddhi mito gataha. This is in the 14th chapter he speaks this, 10th chapter also he speaks this. So he has spoken this again. But now I will speak it emphatically, conclusively. Shrume paramam vachaha. These are my supreme instructions. Why am I speaking this to you? Ishto sime drudhamiti. Ishto. Ishto means you are loved by me. Ishta Daivat, you know, which is your worshipable deity. So for some people, may Gopinath, may Madan Mohan, each of the Goswamis had their Ishta Daivat. So Ishta, you are very Ishta for me. And how is it? Drudamiti. He says, you know, strongly loved by me. So the Acharya described that Krishna is saying, Krishna is determined to love the living entity. The living entity is determined to forget Krishna. The Lord is determined to love the living entity. And Ishtosimi Drudamiti, because I love you very dearly, Tato Vakshami Tehitam. Therefore, I am speaking this for your benefit. For your benefit, I am speaking this. So, this is my supreme instruction. This is the conclusion of the Gita. So, the next verse is called by Ramacharya the Charam Shloka, the supreme verse of the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna builds up to that supreme verse. So, Krishna gives the instruction in the next verse, and then, sorry. Ramacharya calls 18.66 as a Charam Shloka, but as Charam Shloka comes before that, he describes what he should do. So, now this verse, Bhuyaha, he said, now again I am speaking this. So, you see this verse is a repetition. The same verse came in 9.34, but there is a significant difference between these two verses. So, let's recite 18.65. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru मामे वैश्यसि सत्यं ते प्रतिजाने प्रियोसि मे. Yes.
Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend.
Yes. So he is telling four things which you should do. Think of me. Actually, the whole purpose of spirituality is not so much to change our externals as to change our internals. Now, man mana, think of me. And the fundamental problem in this material world is that people don't have any satisfying object of thought. People think that our problem is food, clothing, shelter. Well, yes, it is a problem, lack of food, clothing, shelter. But if that were the only problem, then those people who had food, clothing, shelter, they should be happy. What all of us need and what all of us lack is a satisfying object of thought. Actually, in the material world, whatever we think of, that only agitates our mind. You think that, okay, my mind is agitated by my boss, by my wife, by my health, I'll just watch TV. And I'll become peaceful. But the TV is a great mind agitator. It's not the mind pacifier. Although apparently it pacifies the mind, but it agitates the mind even further. So what people want is, just as when we are tired, we want to rest our bodies. So people want to rest their minds. Because what happens is, imagine I'm sitting here and suddenly the earth starts shaking. Hey, what is this? I sit there and it starts shaking. I'll go there, everywhere start shaking. Where will I rest? So like that, you know, we take our mind, wherever we put our mind, it gets agitated. You think about office, there's agitation. You think about home, there's agitation. You think about finance, there's agitation. Whatever you think about, there's agitation. So where do I put my mind? So what everybody lacks is a rest for the mind, a satisfying object of thought. That's why the first instruction of spirituality is fix the mind on God. Man mana. Because God in the Bible is said that God is the rock of all ages. Rock of all ages, just like it said, rock is something which doesn't normally deteriorate. Like in the Bible it is said that don't build your house on sand, build your house on rock. So if you build on sand, you know, some flood comes, it will all fall down. You build on rock, it will last longer. But even an ordinary rock will not last for very long. But God is the rock of all ages. He will stay for all times. Therefore, Krishna is one shelter who will always give us rest and strength for our mind and thought. The first instruction of spirituality is man mana. And how should you think of me? Don't think of me as a like an objective, detached way, like a scientist observes a sample of a microscope under a mic as a bacterial sample. Don't think of an objective, detached way. Think of me with love. Bhava mad bhakto. Because that sort of objective, clinical, detached thinking doesn't lead to any benefit. Yes. See, there is a patient who goes to a doctor. A doctor may study the patient's body very thoroughly. He studies his leg. Okay, what is your temperature? What is your blood pressure? And you know, he may know about the patient's body much more than his mother may knows. But who knows the person? The mother knows the person, isn't it? So actually, there is knowledge of God and there is knowledge about God. So by studying books, we get knowledge about God. By associating with devotees, we get knowledge of God. What is the difference between the two? Knowledge of God and knowledge about God? Knowledge about God is knowledge about the person. Like a doctor knows so much. You know, he may even know the stool and urine composition. The mother doesn't know that. But even if he knows everything, the doctor doesn't love the patient. The doctor loves the fees that the patient is going to pay. That's all. So, like that, the mother loves the child. Because the mother is approaching the child for developing a relationship. Is the doctor approaching the patient for developing a relationship? No. Yeah, he wants a relationship, but relationship is so that he can get the fees from it. That's all. So, you know, there are many people who may study books about Krishna and Ram and whatever. And they may get a knowledge about God, which is useful, but that is not the purpose. Because knowledge about somebody is not knowledge of them. Knowledge of God means, okay, this is what he is. This is about his personality, about his nature. The approach is a personal and related. You know, all of us, to some extent, we had knowledge about Krishna. No. Maybe at least if you see about the pastime of Krishna book, 50% of the pastime we must have heard before also, before coming to Krishna consciousness. But that was all knowledge about God. That did not engender any attraction in our hearts. Why? Because bhakti sanjayate bhakti. Bhakti comes only by associating with bhaktas. So only those who have love for Krishna, when you associate with them, they give us their desires. Therefore, yes, you are not just meant to think of Krishna in a detached way. Bhava mad bhakto, become my devotee. And then he says, madhyachi and mam namaskuru. So first he said, okay, think about me, invest your emotions in me, and then next to talk about the actions. You worship me and offer your homage unto me. And what will happen by this? Mam evaishyasi, you will come back to me. And then he says, they are seeking the truth. Pratijane priyosime. The previous verse also had the word ishta. To vakshami, ishta, dear to me. Now also Krishna is saying priyosime, you are very dear to me. And if you see, 9.34 also had the same first part. Manmanabho madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishyase. Till here, till 2.5 portions of the verse, you know, 2.5 lines, they are same. If you are engaged in this way, you will come back to me. But here he is saying, I'm speaking the truth. Please believe me. I'm not lying. I'm not flattering. I'm actually speaking the truth. Pratijane. Pratijane means I proclaim. Where does the word pratijane come as other than Bhagavad Gita? This is a famous verse. Kante pratijani. Pratijani means declare, proclaim. So Krishna told Arjuna that you proclaim my devotee will not perish. But now Krishna's heart is overflowing with compassion. He says, I proclaim this. What do I proclaim? You are very dear to me. I will not lie. I will not cheat. I have come to give you the best. So, Mame Vaishyasi, you will come to me. Because you are very dear to me, therefore I am proclaiming this to you for your benefit. Now, Arjuna is suddenly touched by Krishna's fervent call. But still there is some lingering reservation in his heart. There are so many other duties. You know, I have my duty to my grandfather, my teacher, my this, my that. And Krishna says, forget it all. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma shuchah. Translation.
Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear.
Do not fear. You know, one of the great problems in spiritual life is fear. Fear. Actually, you know, material life is full of so many dangers, but people have no fear. So many problems can happen in material life. You know, when we try to take a job, we get married, we go abroad, so many things can go wrong. But we are not afraid. Although even if we are afraid, we should go ahead, let me do it. Go ahead and do it. We have a sense of adventure. But in spiritual life, we have so much fear. This goes wrong, that goes wrong, that goes wrong. One time, Devamrita Maharaj was giving a lecture in IIT. So one boy asked him, you know, some people become brahmacharis. What if ISKCON closes down tomorrow? What will happen to the brahmachari? So Maharaj asked him, you have joined IIT, what if IIT closes down tomorrow? So the point is, you know, but when it comes to surrendering to Krishna, our mind thinks of all imaginable and unimaginable excuses. Not surrender. The point is not that one should become a brahmachari or not. The point is, the mind comes up with so many excuses. So, that's why Krishna is saying, do not fear, do not fear. Whatever is the problem, I will take care of you. And sarva dharman parityajya. Now, this is one of the big mysteries of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna came to dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. And now he says, dharman, sarva dharman parityajya. And he is not only telling, you know, some dharman parityajya, see, sarva dharman parityajya. Give up all varieties of religion, not just some variety, all varieties. So, you know, there are Svartha Brahmanas who cannot understand this. So, I was hearing one recitation of the Bhagavad Gita. These are my Svartha Brahmanas. So, what they have done is, sarva adharman parityajya. They have changed the person. You know, this is actually while in the manuscript writing, one akar was forgotten. So, you know, sarva adharman parityajya. No, because the Bhagavad teaching is so lofty that the ordinary mind cannot grasp it. How can Krishna say, give up all varieties of religion? Sarva adharman parityajya. He is actually telling, give up all varieties of religion for the supreme religion. What is the supreme religion? Mam ekam sharanam raja. Mam ekam sharanam raja. Surrender unto me. You know, in his new book, Yoga of Love, Radhanath Maharaj writes very beautifully. I had the opportunity to edit that book. So he says that, you know, God is greater than the religions that are dedicated to him. No, what happens is, religions try to restrict access to God. You know, Christians will say, this is the only way. Muslims will say, this is the only way. You know, we at ISKCON also cannot say, ISKCON is the only way. Exclusivism is never the Vedic philosophy. So, God is greater than the religions that we dedicate to him. So, when Krishna is saying, sarva dharma, this can mean many things. But, the ultimate purpose of all dharma is what? Mam ekam sharanam raja, to surrender unto me. So, Krishna is not, the principle here is not to give up religion. The principle is to take shelter. Mam ekam sharanam raja. So then when we take mam ekam sharanam raja, how we will take shelter, that will vary. So for example, for some of us, you know, the dharma of a brahmachari is anukul for mam ekam sharanam raja. For some of us, the dharma of a grahastha is anukul for mam ekam sharanam raja. The purpose is everybody has to do mam ekam sharanam raja. So then, give up the conditioned ideas of what the dharma should be. And then in the previous verse Krishna said, Manmanabhav Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Maskuro. So how can one do this best? In whichever dharma one can do that the best, that's what we should follow. So Prabhupada wanted Varnashram Dharma. Why did he want Varnashram Dharma? You know, we are not followers of Varnashram. We are aiming for the goal of transcendence. But within Varnashram, whatever is anukul, we accept that. Mam ekam visharanam vacha. And what about if I give up some dharma? If there is some papa which comes by this, aham tvam sarva papebhyo. So you know, generally in editing, whenever we have, Jayadutt Maharaj taught us that, you know, if anybody makes any blanket statements, you should always be suspicious about blanket statements. What is blanket statements, you know? All abortions are caused by the sinful, selfish desire for sex. So all. What about some woman is raped? And then she wants to abort. You know, as soon as there is a blanket statement, you should always be suspicious. Can you never use all? All people who are not devotees are demons. Really all? There may be many in the Grizzo. So wherever there is blanket statement, you should be suspicious. That is the idea. But Krishna twice uses blanket statements. Sarva dharman prityaja antva sarva papebhyo moksheshaṁ. Why Krishna is emphasizing? Because I am the controller of everything. I am the controller of everyone. I will take care of you. So whatever be the sinful reactions, I will take care. Whatever be the other dharmas, forget them. Krishna is so emphatic over there. And he is telling, just surrender unto me. So, although sometimes the Bhagavad Gita is thought of as, you know, as a very philosophical book. Yes, it is philosophical, but behind the philosophy is a very compassionate heart. And sometimes we get overwhelmed by the philosophy that we forget the heart that is there. That's why if you see the Bengali Vaishnava songs that we sing and the Sanskrit verses of prayer that we sing, actually both are the same. But in the Bengali Vaishnava songs, what happens? Because the language is simple, so we can understand very easily the emotions. Gopinath mama nivedana shuno. Very easy. The same thing may be said by Brahmaji in a very elaborate Sanskrit prayer. Now what happens is, Sanskrit is overwhelmed so much that where is the emotion? First of all, you know, actually, there is comprehension and then there is emotion. So we struggle only with the comprehension. So where is the emotion? We don't reach the emotion only. That's why, what our acharyas there and sometimes like, what happens, if there is a, actually it is called step down transformer. You know, 440 volts. So what happens is, 440 volts, you cannot use it. Enough. You touch that, you get shocked and blown away only. So like that, people read Sanskrit verses, don't understand anything. So the acharyas do a step down transformer. Step down, not in the sense that they lose the meaning, but they make the meaning accessible to us. And then we understand it. So, but sometimes, in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna's heart comes out. So he is saying, I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. And then, we have 4-5 more verses. Should we continue or should we stop? Okay. So I just tell what happens in the next few verses. Next 4 verses, Krishna will tell Arjuna the consequences. First he says this, if you... First you know Krishna. Now Krishna has spoken his whole heart. And then he becomes a little conservative. I have spoken this to you, but please don't speak this to everyone else.
Therefore, he says, don't speak this to... Actually, if you see that, what all Krishna says, don't speak it to.
If you see that, practically there is no one left only to speak it to.
Can you read the next translation? Or basically, Krishna says, don't speak it to envious, don't speak it to those who are not devoted, those who are not serving.
And then who is left? Everybody in this material world is envious. But then Krishna, okay, then again, actually Krishna's heart is coming out here. He says, don't speak. But then he says, speak it to those who are devoted. Now, who are those who are devoted? Actually, ultimately, everybody's soul is a devotee. Prabhupada writes in one Bhagavatam Purport. You know, because Christopher Columbus was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, therefore the Lord arranged for him to have the credit of discovering America. I wonder how Columbus was a devotee.
You know, Prabhupada did not see it a material vision that Christopher Columbus was a Catholic who went because of the ghetto.
But seeing that soul, ultimately every soul is a potential devotee. So the 2 verses Krishna will tell, 67, 68, 69 will tell, the glory of preaching his message. So first he said, don't speak this. But then he said, oh, speak it. Speak it to those who are devoted. Ultimately, everybody will become devoted. And then somebody says, hey, preaching is very difficult, I can't do that. But then Krishna said, at least study it. So then if you study it, you are also worshipping me. Studying is also very difficult. At least hear it then. At least hear, you'll get purified and you'll attain. You'll attain eternal abode by that. And then after that, Krishna tells Arjuna in 72nd verse. He says, oh Arjuna, have you understood properly what I have said? Have you understood? Are all your doubts gone? Kachid etat chutam partha tvai ekagrena chita. So have you heard attentively? Kachid agyana sammoha. Your ignorance, your illusion, is it gone? So Chakravarti Path tells over there that Krishna is so anxious that Arjuna understands properly. That he is saying that, Arjuna, if you are not understood, you know, I will continue my yoga maya and this whole battle will stop again and I will repeat the whole Bhagavad Gita again for you if you want. So Krishna is so anxious. That is Krishna. You know, you go to an ordinary college professor and he speaks something. Say, I have not understood. He says, please repeat. He says, I will repeat. Come to my private tuitions.
So, Krishna is not like that. Krishna is concerned.
I'll repeat everything for free. Again. So, that is Krishna's heart. Although, God in one sense detached because He has given us free will. But He's attached. He's attached for our own good. He's detached in the sense that He doesn't want to impose His will on us. But He's very concerned that we don't make wrong choices and have to suffer the consequences of that. That's why He comes in this world. And so fervently He gives us message. He asks Arjuna. So have you understood, Arjuna? Otherwise I am ready to repeat the whole thing. And then Arjuna assures, I have understood. And the conclusion of the Gita is, then Karishye Vachanam Tava. I will do whatever you tell me to do. 18.73. So, we see this heart of Krishna being manifested here in these last verses of the Gita. And that is a heart, a very sweet and loving heart. And it is to that heart that we aspire to become attracted. And when we are attracted to the heart of Krishna, then Krishna enters into our heart. And then when Krishna enters into our heart, all the illusory attachments are driven away. And then we can practice it. Mama ekam sharanam raja. And then as Krishna promises, we will return back to His kingdom. And one practical way in which we can attract, we can place Krishna in our heart, is actually trying to place Krishna in the hearts of others. Because when we place Krishna in the hearts of others, Krishna becomes very pleased and He manifests in our hearts very powerfully. So, the Bhagavad Gita's message is a message for action and transformation. Two things. Transformation of ourselves and action for transforming others. So, both are there. It's a book of transformation and action. So, action is go out and preach, share Krishna. Transformation is, yes, we have to transform ourselves. So, this is the heart of Krishna. This is the ultimate message. Transformation and action. Thank you very much. Have some questions? Yeah, maybe for one-on-one question, one or two questions you can take.
Yeah. Regarding Soho, you explained the question. But, exactly how, like, individual, like, for example, I may be attracted to some kind of services and everything.
Yeah, so in our stage, ideally speaking, in the initial years of our Krishna consciousness, we should just do whatever we are told to do. We can also observe, okay, this service I like, this service I don't like. But the point is, at our stages, our liking and our not liking is not based so much on our swabhav, it is based on the difficulty that we face in the service.
Some service is difficult, I don't want to do this.
But then you go to any other service, no, you know, I was just talking with one devotee, he was telling his spiritual master told him, you are not your body, you are your mind.
You say that you are too much on the mental platform. you are on your mental platform, you are your mind.
I like this, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this. So initially we should just do whatever we are told to do. Bhakti Thakur also says in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita that Vaigyanik Varnashram, how is it established? He says now because there have been intercaste marriages and it is complete degradation, so you can't determine the Varna by birth. So he says that let people do all activities according to their nature, and by the age of 12, the senior should observe. And senior should observe, and by the age of 12, the person's nature will come out. If you are observing carefully, and then he can be trained according to his nature. And he says, okay, still if after the 12 also, you are not able to observe, then you should have one more year of training. And then you should be a three-panel committee who should observe very intensively. So, Bhakti Thakur is very practical. So, like that. In our initial stages of our spiritual life, it's very difficult for us to know what is our nature. So we just do whatever services we are told to do. But while doing different services and facing challenges and going through those challenges, we should also see which are the services we feel like doing. See, this material world is always a place of problems. But The expert of the Varnashram is to give people the problems that they will like to solve.
You know, for example, if you tell
somebody, you know, in which Purana is this verse coming? My God, somebody will say, you know, Bhagavatam has 18,000 verses, all the Puranas 110,000 verses. How will I ever find out which verse this Purana is? You tell a person with a Vaishya or a Shudra, yeah, forget it, I can't do it. Brahmana, yes, I get to read all the Puranas. Or somebody, can you please manage this big camp? So much headache, I don't want to do it. But somebody is a Kshatriya nature, yes, I want to manage. So what happens is, everybody has to face problems in the material world. But the expertise of Varnashram is, you get to face the problem that you like to face. Why we like to face? Because we have some talents in solving those problems. So like that we keep observing whatever services we do and even our seniors are observing. And over a period of years, we will find out that this is a service which I feel comfortable doing. Not comfortable in the sense that I go into comfort zone. But it is natural for me. I can do it nicely and I can do it happily. There are challenges. In modern management companies, they say, you should take up challenges. They all positively take up big challenges. Yes, it's good to take up challenges. But you know, if we are essentially incompatible, then the challenges simply make us miserable. Somebody who is not of a Brahminical nature and you tell him, study. Say, take up, have positive attitude, man. Say, study. What positive attitude, you know, is not possible for him. So we just get completely burdened. So initially we just do whatever we are told to do, but observe ourselves. Observe our minds, observe our consciousness, and let our seniors also observe. And then in a period of few years we'll find out, yes, this is what I am good at. And that's what we do. Yes, Vibhav.
Suppose you mentioned that material nature is dual, we are also, the soul is also dual, and Lord is our ultimate control. So, my question is regarding the terrorist activities that happen. So, the terrorist is a soul, right? And he is making some desire to cause damage. And then material nature is providing him facilities for
correct.
Doing that. And above nature is Lord, and he is controlling him. So, doesn't God intervene and try to stop him, or why does he allow him to do
such things? Two things. First is that the very fact that Krishna has given us free will means that depending on our past karma, we have different degrees of free will. See, all of us have unlimited freedom within a limited framework. What does that mean? It's like a cow tied to a rope. So within the framework of the rope, the cow can move freely. But it cannot move outside that. So within the radius of the rope, the cow has unlimited freedom. But that unlimited freedom is in a limited framework. So like that, now, as souls in human bodies, we cannot fly. But we can walk, and walking we can go wherever we want. So we have unlimited freedom within a limited framework. This is simply a gross example. Like that, according to our natures also, Krishna has given us unlimited freedom within a limited framework. So somebody may have, by his past karma, the freedom to destroy. So now that person, if he misuses that freedom, then surely he will have to bear the consequences. Now those who are affected by that, we understand that it is also their karma. When a terrorist, somebody, some people get killed in the terrorist attacks, it's very sad. And as devotees, when we deal with such situations, you know, practically we are meant to deal with people based on their actions in this life. Philosophically, we understand that everything is happening according to karma. This is a very important point to understand. See, practically, for example now, if a thief robs money from a person's house, or a murderer kills somebody. Now, philosophically, understand, if somebody is killed, it's his own karma that he was killed. But the king cannot be satisfied at the philosophical level. King has to act on the practical level. Practical level, he was innocent. And therefore, one who killed has to be punished. So now, is this contradictory to the practical and the philosophical? No. The practical and the philosophical are not contradictory. The philosophical vision is for the Brahmana, the practical vision is for the Kshatriya. Of course, the Brahmana may also tell the Kshatriya to act practically. And the Kshatriya may also ask Brahmana, what is the philosophical understanding of this? But the point is, in general, we deal with people based on the way they behave in this life. Based on the way this is. Suppose, you know, if I go and insult somebody, why are you insulting me? I am giving your karma from your past life.
What all this? I'll give you your karma in this life now. So it doesn't work like that.
So in this, generally speaking, we deal with people based on their karma in this life. So, yes, those people who died, they were innocent. Is it correct to say that like that? Well, we have to see what enhances our devotion. What enhances our compassion. So, you know, a devotee should not be so hard-hearted that whoever has died, just their own karma that they are dying. That's not a proper devotional attitude. They are all the children of Krishna. And they are Krishna, they are meant to be our objects of compassion. Our objects of not just compassion, service. So we want to help them in every way. So that way, philosophically, I understand it's true. Yeah, this is what has happened. You know, in the Mahabharata, Draupadi asks Krishna, Krishna, when I called you when I was being insulted, why did you not come? If you just philosophically, you know, see, this is lack of faith in Draupadi. How can she question her worshipable Lord? Mahabharata says, she asked Krishna, why did you not come? But then, what does Krishna say? Hey, how can you not have faith in me? How can you demand? How can you question my actions? How Krishna doesn't say this? I'm sorry. Krishna says, I'm sorry. I was busy with Shalya. So I couldn't come. Shalya had attacked Dwarka and I had to go there and I was busy. So, you know, God is a person with a heart. Now, we can understand philosophically that there was a plan of the Lord and He wanted to have, as it is said in the Mahabharata, that, you know, He wanted the Kurus to be destroyed. Everything is alright. But Krishna is a person. And he sees so warmly reciprocating as a person over here. So I'm sorry. I couldn't come at that time. You know, I was not invited for the gambling match. If I had been there, I would not have allowed the gambling match itself to take place. What to speak of allowing you to be disrobed? So, Krishna, now somebody says, oh, does that mean that God is not omnipotent? God is omnipotent, but God does not always exhibit His omnipotence. Because if God is always exhibiting His omnipotence, then, you know, there will be no personal relationship with Him. So, the Bhagavad Gita understanding of God is the Vedic understanding of God is very mysterious. So, like that, yes, terrorists, when they act wrongly, they are misusing their free will. God allows them because that's what they think will make them happy. So, you think this will make you happy? Try it out. And you will see for yourself, it won't make you happy. But of course, you are causing harm to others, so you have to bear the consequences for that. But even before those consequences come to you, you think this will make you happy, try it out. Try it out. And then you see it doesn't make you happy, then I am there waiting for you in your heart. If you want to turn to me. Okay, yes, Prabhu.
You said now that many times we know about God, but we may not know of God.
We may not know God directly. Of God or just God?
Yeah. So
see, I know about Ishwaranand Prabhu. Do I know Ishwaranand Prabhu? It's like that. You know, for example, I've heard a lot about you. From different devotees. Now, I was such a sweet, sincere, responsible devotee. But then I have never met you. So I can't really know what, I can't know you in one sense. It's a crude example, as Prabhupada would say. But
my question is that, like, isn't it like many times what happens that, like earlier times, the knowledge is actually revealed in the heart of a person. And many times, knowledge is not given to if he is not qualified. So, but in our system, what happens many times, we know the knowledge. So, isn't have a negative effect? Like, we don't know actually the knowledge, but we have been taught, and according to our understanding, we have some perception of whatever knowledge we have. Like, so, you're getting my question, I think. Like, the even one is not on that platform, but he gets that knowledge. So, is it correct or not correct? Like, one way is that person, like even Ramacharya, when he told Sardharma Parityajya, he told, you know, Dashrathi, that after so many times he understood that inner meaning of that. So, many cases in our way that, you know, we may think, oh, I know it. But actually the knowledge has to be revealed to that person. So, like how much it helps just knowing it?
Yes, good question. In the 6th chapter, Krishna tells 6.8, Jnana Vijnana Truptatma. It's not just Jnana, but Jnana and Vijnana. Then you become Truptatma. You become satisfied. But you cannot have Vijnana unless you have Jnana. So Jnana is not sufficient, but generally speaking, Vijnana cannot come without Jnana. So we acquire theoretical knowledge. That is important. See, even by theoretical knowledge, we can become intellectually convinced. If I just study the Bhagavad Gita seriously, I can become intellectually convinced that Krishna is God. Although I may not develop love for God by that, but the intellectual conviction will come. See, in our bhakti, there are two aspects. Ultimately, the soul has to offer his love to Krishna. But before that, the intelligence has to be convinced. After the intelligence is convinced, then the mind becomes transformed. So, purification of the mind comes later. First, there has to be intellectual conviction. Just like, we may understand that lust is bad. Lust is bad. I should not indulge in it. But that understanding that doesn't mean that lust is going to go away. Still, I have to strive to purify myself. But if I don't even understand that lust is bad, then how can I ever strive to give away lust? I'll try to increase lust. Isn't it? So, knowledge is alone not sufficient. What is sufficient is transformation. But knowledge is foundational for transformation. So, by knowledge, we become intellectually convinced. And when we apply that knowledge, then we become purified. Then our mind. So, when we say realization, what is a realization? Realization means the mind accepts it to be a reality. When the mind accepts it to be a reality, then it is a realization. So, for example, now if anybody offers us a cigarette to smoke or meat to eat, will we? It's not even a temptation. Why? Not even, in fact, you know, sometimes when somebody offers us, somebody is eating meat in a train, you know, we curl our mouth and spit at the thought. Like Yamunacharya said, we can do it for that, although we might have been eating meat earlier. So, how is that? Because the mind has accepted. No pleasure in this. So, that is a very elevated stage of advancement. But that will come. But first, if somebody whose mind is not disgusted by meat, at least he should be intellectually convinced. It's not good. You know. For my health, it's not good. For the environment, it's not good. For the world's resources, it's not good. From the karmic point of view, it's not good. So, intellectual conviction is important. So, intellectual conviction that Krishna is God is important. But the trap is that if I just have intellectual knowledge, if I think that I am spiritually advanced by that, and that is a big trap. I have to see how much spontaneous attraction to Krishna I have. How much does my mind go towards Krishna? Especially, how much does my mind take rest in Krishna? Because when I have nothing to do, does my mind go towards Krishna or does it go towards Maya? I will understand. It always goes towards Maya. That means I am not so advanced. Somebody may not have so much knowledge as me, but his mind may be going towards Krishna. So, especially for most of us, we are from well-educated backgrounds, we have some intellectual nature. So, for us, intellectual conviction is important. And so, when we have that intellectual conviction, we can also preach very persuasively. But we should not mistake the intellectual understanding to be spiritual advancement. That is the trap. Intellectual understanding is very, very useful for our personal practice and for preaching to others. But it itself is not spiritual advancement. That we have to be careful. If we had no knowledge about Krishna only, then how would we ever develop love for Krishna? Is it clear? So knowledge is important, but it is not all important. Yes, so last question.
So in connection to the same question, so you mentioned that intellectual platform is, intellectual understanding is important. But I don't remember the verse exactly. There is a verse where the hierarchy is mentioned. Devotee is higher than intellectual person, is higher than empirical and, you know, fruitive worker. So, if a person wants to start in Krishna consciousness, what is the best platform to start? Should he directly start serving or should he start at the intellectual platform? Or which is the best starting point?
Krishna says, evam buddhe param buddhva samsthabhyatmanam atmana jahishatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasana. In 3rd chapter, 43rd verse, he says that, evam buddhe, with intelligence, param buddhva, understand that you are transcendental. And, evam buddhe param buddhva samsthabhyatmanam atmana. In this way, situate yourself on the spiritual platform and thus conquer lust. That means, Krishna is telling two things over here. First, by your intellect, understand that you are transcendental, that this material things and material objects cannot give you pleasure. Your pleasure will be something different. Transcendental. And then, situate yourself on the transcendental platform. What is situating yourself on the transcendental platform? That's not just, I am not the body and the soul. It is, Jivera Swarupa Hoye Krishna Ritila. So, we have to do service. So at our stage, both are important. If you see, Prabhupada gave us a lot of practical services, and Prabhupada told us also to read books, Prabhupada arranged classes. So it's not that it's this or that, it is this and that. It's practical services and intellectual understanding. So for some people, they don't need so much intellectual understanding. They just want to do more practical services, especially people are not so well educated or so intellectually inclined. They just want to do services. And sometimes you go a lot into philosophy, they say, itna kuch dimag kyun kharab kar rahe? They'll feel like, why are you stretching your brain so much? But other people will love that and they will feel inspired by that. So the relative proportion may vary. But everybody should do both. Even the intellectual should do some menial service, some physical service. And even those who are doing some physical service, they should also hear some classes, some katha. And there's a balance.
Isn't it true that you could do service to intellectual understanding comes on
and so on? Maybe. But you may not stay in doing the service till the intellectual understanding comes. You know, we don't know when it will come. It will come, but we don't know when. It may take some time. Why should I do service? So you see, without intellectual conviction, service becomes work. And work is something that has to be finished off as soon as possible, so that we can do other things. So with that attitude, you know, Krishna is not pleased, and realizing doesn't come. So intellectual understanding is useful. Jiva Goswami says that in the sadhaka stage, it is the intellect which keeps the sadhaka on the spiritual platform. So it's important. By doing service, we get realization, that's true. But how long? We cannot say. We have a formula. Today I did service, so I got realization. But it's not like that. It may take some time. Therefore, we should not minimize either. If you have to choose between the two, you know, it's not so easy. Service is certainly important. Or just by intellectual study, we will not get realization. But just by service also, whether we will get realization, yes, we can. But it depends on what attitude we do it. So intellectual conviction helps us to develop the right attitude also. Maybe not develop the right attitude, at least understand and aspire for the right attitude. Developing takes a matter of the heart. It's important. So it's like, I'll conclude with a simple example. See, you know, a small child may be throwing a ball against the wall and catching it. And a scientist may be throwing a ball against the wall. Scientist may be throwing, okay, if I throw the ball at this speed, the ball is coming back this way. That means the wall is this hard. And the ball is this hard. And my catching up, it is coming back with this force. He may have some sensor in his hand also to see what force the ball is coming back. So, externally speaking, the activity, throwing the ball is the same. But you know, a person who has understanding of physics and gravity, he understands deeper what is happening over there. And you know, by the way the ball is coming, the way the ball is, the sound is coming, the way the force is coming, he can learn so much about the situation which is happening over there. Isn't it? Because he is understanding of physics. So like that, you know, a person who is not at all philosophical, he may come and he may, Mushi and Dadi will chant and Hare Krishna and be happy. And a devotee may chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But a devotee is observing. Okay. I chanted. Before that I was feeling so disturbed by this. Now suddenly the disturbance is gone. The non-devotee may also experience the same thing. Oh, it is a good experience. Let me go back and watch TV now. Devotee says, oh, that means Krishna's shelter is for real. I should take the shelter of Krishna more. So, Prabhupada writes, yesterday when I was reading CC, he explains Machitta Madgata Prana very beautifully. So just like when scientists do some experiments, then they come together to discuss the results of the experiment, so that they can both learn and do future experiments better. So like that, devotees come together to discuss their experiences with Krishna consciousness, so that they can get better experiences in future. So it's like that. So if we have philosophical knowledge, then we can actually see the process of Krishna consciousness working. The process is going to work anyway. If I throw the ball is going to bounce back. Gravity is going to act. Like that, anybody who chants and dances in kirtan, he is going to feel some ecstasy. But you know, if I have the philosophical understanding, I can actually see, okay, this is how the process is working. This is what is happening. And then that increases my understanding. It gives me direction. This is what I should do more. It gives me ability to guide others. So many things come when we understand what is happening. Is this point clear? So, even in the application of the process of Krishna consciousness, the benefit is much more if we understand how the process is working. And for that also we need philosophy. Okay? Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki Jai. Shrila Prabhupada ki
Jai.
Gaur Bhaktavinda ki
Jai.
Dai Gaur Premanandi. Jai.